Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim here, and along with me is my co-host Han. Han, good afternoon, good evening.
Good evening, Jim. It's going to be an exciting night.
It is, actually. Tonight's show is episode number 7, Lease or Own. So we're going to go over the particulars, specifically the things that you may or may not have thought about if you're looking at making a decision whether should I lease or should I own. This could basically be something that if you're new, starting out your new practice, obviously there'll be things in here for you to listen to. If you're an existing practice and you're trying to make a decision, okay, do I stay where I'm at and continue a lease? Do I move to a new location and lease, or do I build new? So there's quite a lot we can get to go over and talk about. And we're going to really start with the leasing aspect. Now, Han, we've never really said that one is better than the other, do we?
No, it's usually we lay it out so that way you have options. We don't push either, you know, one way or another, because ultimately it's your personal circumstances and being informed, having the information allow you to make, you know, better decision to suit your particular circumstances. So, did I answer your question, Jim?
Absolutely. And you're exactly correct. It really is based upon the individual and what you feel most comfortable with. And we're really here for one thing and one thing only, and that's to give the information out. When it comes to designing, we have designed many a facilities that were a leased facility. We've designed many a facility that were an owned facility, and that owned facility could be a renovation or a new build. It doesn't have to be only a new build. But under the leasing category, really you have the most important things you have to deal with are the conditions. The conditions are broken up into several things, the first of which is back several episodes ago, we talked about building your team. And one of those important team members is what, if you're deciding to do a lease or contemplating to do a lease, then we would recommend that you involve a leasing expert that is very familiar with dental practices. Han, I'll let you talk about that because you've actually had the most experience with those kind of folks.
Well, I think there's three options. If you've never done a lease negotiation, I would recommend you get professional help in a good way. Because I mean, you can do, you know, you can, of course, there's a lot of resources out there that you can read on and say, hey, I'm pretty confident I can negotiate this myself. Some can do that well and probably with a lot more luck than others. But the two main options you have are either you go with a broker, a real estate broker, or a lease negotiator. They work similar in function, but I think the biggest topic of discussions are usually who pays who. Now, again, we're not pushing either or, because they both are professional with a lot of experience, a lot of insight, and they can do, both can do a great job for you. In terms of a real estate broker, they, of course, they negotiate the lease for you. However, the way they could pay is they could pay by the landlord. I guess our attitude or our perception is usually the person who writes the check is the boss. So you work for whoever writes the check. In this case, if the broker could pay by the landlord, then the landlord is ultimately, technically, is his boss, his or her boss. So the negotiation may be for you, but it may or may not be in the best of your interest. Okay? The lease negotiator, on the other hand, work for you, an answer to you. The way that, my understanding is the way that one of my good friend George Bell, I explained, is that a lease negotiator starts with the letter of intention. So what does the landlord want in terms of dollar for that space that he wants to lease? And that sets the parameter for the negotiation. So whatever the lease negotiator can negotiate at the signing of the lease, the difference between the two, a number, the starting number and the final number, and they get pay on a percentage of that. Of course, you never ask another man or woman how much they make. So I leave that discussion between the lease negotiator and you, the individual looking to lease the space. Again, they have years of experience. They know the language. They know what to look for. They know what to look at. And in my opinion, the meaner they are, the bigger their bark, the better they represent for you. Okay, so it just part of their nature. They want to do the best job they can for you. But out of the two, again, I'm not pushing one or the other. But I like to have control of the table. I want to be the boss, and so whoever I pay is the one that's going to represent me. Okay, and
well,
I'll leave it at that.
The lease negotiator, as you pointed out, actually the incentive is for them to get that new lease as cheaply as possible for you, because their incentive is they make more money that way. It's kind of the reverse incentive is if the project's bigger and if it's on a percentage, then you pay more in a fee. It's actually the opposite way around, which is perfect because they do a better job. You get a better ultimate lease term. And, so, yes, you have to pay for that extra savings. But in fact, you're making that savings up over a long period of time. And typically, we see leases that run anywhere from, 3 to 10 years on?
Usually, I think it's 10 years. I mean, if you're gonna put in, up to, for a lease space, around 2,500 square feet, 3,000 square feet, you're going to put up close to $500,000 in it, okay? 5 years down the road. Yeah, and so 5 years down the road, you pull up the rug and you leave. That's a lot of money to leave behind. And so the lease term, I do believe, is usually 10 years with two 5 years renewal. Because most of the time the practice try to stay in the place for at least 10 years.
Exactly, because just from a business standpoint, it is very difficult to pick up your practice and move to another location. So I guess that would be one of the cons of a lease situation is the landlord knows that you've put a lot of money into your facility, that a lot of it you can't take with you if you leave. So they've pretty much got you in a lesser position of power when it comes to the lease negotiation.
But
so some of
the pros on it is that if you are leasing a space to a business, okay, let's say it's a restaurant, a pet store or a boutique or a dentist, the dentist would be much more desirable. They are a more stable tenant. So it is a pro in term for the landlord, because he have a long-term tenant. It is a pro for the tenant, because it's a negotiation chip for the tenant as well, because they're going to be there for a long term.
Yeah, use that to your advantage. Let the lease negotiator make sure that they let the landlord know that this isn't a lease that they're going to have to deal with for the next, 10 years. Mm-hmm. You're looking at long-term investment, long-term steady lease, and that's what landlords want, because they're in the business of a business, and they either own or they have a mortgage on that particular property, and they love it to see, the bank lending institutions love it to see long-term leases for those properties, as opposed to a whole bunch of little short 1 and 2 and 3 year leases.
Yeah, there's a very small percentage of dentists opening practice that, going to default. So it's a very, it's a very stable business or tenant to have.
And that holds true for both leasing and buying. Or owning. Banks tell us all the time that they love to have dentists on their books, because it's a very small percentage, as Hans said, that actually go upside down. And it's a great business model, and they like to take advantage of that. So you can use that as part of your negotiation as well. We'll talk about that a little bit more under your owning side as when you deal with your lending institution. But some of the other lease conditions that one would want to talk about, and your lease negotiator or yourself, whomever's doing it, is the term called triple net. Now, triple net is a nomenclature that has to do with the leasing or the business of leasing, and really is covering all aspects of your of the facility. That includes there's things that have to be talked about. You have to talk about the proper insurance costs. There are taxes. There's both property taxes as well as it's just property taxes. Then there is insurances that cover the building and facility. Then there's utility bills. Sometimes the utility bills are included in what's called the triple net. You have to make sure that that's in there, or that you'll end up paying those by yourself if the utilities are separately metered. That's another thing. If you go into a facility that has 4 or 5 tenants, and you really want to have a scenario where you have your utilities separately metered. A lot of times you get that with electricity, but sometimes you don't get that with water and sewer, and so they take a prorated portion and take the total square footage, divide the bill up by that particular square footage, and say you have 3,000 feet, multiply it times 3,000 feet, and then that's your bill for that month or year. And you have really little or no control. The other is comp costs. Comp costs are unique and interesting things, because they change and vary on a yearly basis. And that would include things like landscaping, maintenance, snow removal, issues that deal with the building itself, maintenance of the building. All those things that have to be done on the outside of a building that the landlord does, he just doesn't, they don't eat that. They break that up just like they would do maybe water and sewer. They'll break that up over the total square footage of the complex by what you own, and you get a percentage of that as a bill. And you would get that bill either on a monthly basis, and then they'd have a reckoning at the end of the year, or they do it on a yearly basis. So all those little things have to be covered under your lease agreement. The big one is tenant improvement. Han, you want to talk a little bit about tenant improvement? Because that's really where our wheelhouse, that's what we deal with.
Well, it's what the landlord is going to give you to build your space. You know, the more they give you, the more they give you toward the build out of your space, the less out of your pocket. My understanding of the German is that they normally don't give it to you for free. Somewhere in there, it's going to be pushed back into your the cost of your lease. So more like it's more like a loan to you. So that way you can build your space. You don't have to spend the money up front. But my understanding is that the sophisticated landlord would break it down and put it in your lease, and you're going to pay for it somehow.
Exactly. You're exactly correct. The landlord's going to take, let's say you've put $250,000 into the tenant build out, and they're going to give you $250,000, and you're going to put in whatever you're going to put in out of your own. That $250,000, they're going to amortize and break out over the term of the loan, and they're going to add interest on it because they're in a business. They're going to find what do they get money for with their banking lending institution. They're going to tack that on there plus a little bit more to make some of on top of it. So there's the advantages if you're young and starting out and you don't have a whole lot of credit capabilities. You can let the landlord kind of be your bank and help you out. And then you just have a monthly payment to make that's a little bit larger as opposed to, okay, I've got the rent payment and then I also have the construction loan financing payment. And you may, for example, be able to only get money at a higher interest rate, so you're paying a little bit more in the total net coming out of the pocket every month nut that you have to make. But
Jim, we only ran into one situation one project where the dentist didn't pay a dime for the space. The entire build out, the equipment, and all that was purchased by the landlord. I've only run into it once. Of course the rent is higher than the normal, but he can afford that, but he couldn't afford the upfront build out. So that was unusual. The landlord actually financed everything.
Right. And you have that capability or possibility to at least ask for it if you're in that particular situation. Maybe you're in a financial situation where you can get money at a better rate than they can and you don't have to pay that upcharge. So, but bottom line is you have a landlord. That landlord is in charge of pretty much everything except for what it states in that lease. So you have to make sure that your lease document covers every aspect of what you want and what you would like to have happen. And then you've got to deal with them. We've had those scenarios, haven't we, Han, where we have great landlords and we have not so great landlords. And we have clients that come in and say, my landlord is just a real jerk. And I want out of here so fast I can't say how fast I want out of here. And they move on to another particular facility because the landlord won't do things that they're supposed to do. You've got that constant stress, a fight with, take care of that sidewalk issue or take care of the snow removal or, take care of this. The lights on the outside of the building are off all the time. My sign doesn't work. All those things that are out there that you have to deal with, you've got that on a kind of a daily basis that you have to hopefully not have to mess with, but it is a possibility. And so with the landlord scenario, you don't have any control.
Jim, other thing, I think, yes, it's true you can have some fantastic landlord and you can be with them for 10, 15, 20 years and no issue. I think the biggest gripe that I've read about or have discussion about is the tenant neighbor. You can move
you
into
don't
a
have
spot.
Control.
Yeah, you can move into a space, and your neighbor is a, you know, is a florist. No big deal. Okay, the florist went out of business after 8 months, and the next neighbor is a tattoo parlor. Okay, or yet a Chinese restaurant. Okay. It's convenient. You go next door for lunch, okay, or dinner. But the problem is when you have neighbors that can drastically change the environment that you had leased. It could be a major impact. Some of the biggest complaint about adjacency of, let's say, a tenant is a restaurant is smell, noise, insect, pests, traffic. You know, so I think that's the number one, not the landlord. It's the number one is the tenant, the new tenant. So your lease. Make sure that in your lease there is language that protects you from competition. So if you're the only dentist in the complex, make sure that the landlord, that you're protected from the landlord leasing to the next two or three tenants that are also dentists to compete with you, and things like that. So, yeah, I think. Your neighbor may create more issue for you than the landlord themselves, but the language of the lease should be to help you to protect your tenancy in that space for the durations of your lease and your options for extensions.
And options are a very important part that you want to integrate into your lease, because let's say you negotiate a 5-year lease and then you have a couple 5-year options. That allows you to make a decision after 5 years. You can either terminate your lease and do something else, move some other location, build, whatever you'd like to do, or you can say, nope, I'm going to stay here and we're going to negotiate whatever that particular new rent is going to be. The same thing with, it could be a 10-year lease with a couple options over top of that. So always have the ability to be able to have options at the end of your lease, so it gives you the possibility options to decide what you'd like to do. Because it's hard to determine what you're going to do in 10 years from now.
You know, Jim, I've read a few discussions where, not everyone want to be a building owner.
That's true.
Okay. So again, every time that you relocate to a new location, it's going to affect your retention of patients, okay? Leasing limit you to the ability of expanding when you need to. So there, of course, everything has their pros and cons. Just as long as you do enough research, ask enough questions so that you know what will work for you.
So that would be another opportunity for an option. Let's say that you are going to lease 3,000 square feet today, but you're thinking, well, maybe 5 years from now, I want to have another 1,000 square feet. All right. The adjacent space hopefully would be one that you would have a option on. If and when it were to become available, then you would have the first right to be able to say yay or nay that I would like to take that and include that into my lease and expand my practice. So you want to have something in your lease agreement that talks about expandability and options on additional space, adjacent space. That is,
because
the worst thing you want to do is move. The worst thing you want to do is move around within that existing facility, because all that tenant improvement you have, unless it's not bolted down, stays, and you got to spend the same amount of money again to go do it some other place. Sure, you can take your chair, you can take your equipment, but that's only a small part of what you have to put into a building to be able to actually turn it into a dental practice.
Actually, you probably want to spell that out on your lease and have a full understanding of what is it that you're going to leave behind. Because assuming that you brought it in, you bolted to the floor, you know, bolted to the wall, you purchased it, therefore you can yank it out and take it with you. You can find yourself in a major legal mess. German term of leasing a space, to pick out a space, I see a lot of push for they call an end cap, which is the very end unit. When I look at that, is there's a pros and cons to that as well. Because we look at the technical aspect of the space, you know, the pros and cons are a little different than exposure. Exposure is always more, you know, the more exposure, the better you are, because you want eyeballs to look at, recognize you first. But in terms of giving you options for expansion and stuff like that, I would lean more toward a space that are sandwiched between, you know, two tenant. So that way, when you're ready to expand, and if one of them vacate, then your chance of expanding is better than waiting for only one tenant next door to you to vacate. So
exactly, you double your odds.
Yeah, weigh out your option too. But from a technical thinking is that if you're sandwiched between two units and you're in a cold climate, you have two blankets, one on each side of you to keep you warm. Okay, so your utility is less than the guys at the inn that's exposed to the weather. Okay, it may not be a big deal, but maybe I just thought about that. That would be another factor to think about too. Because it's a lot of a lot of owner and client that we design building for, they never take into account of utility costs. So they go from a 3,000 square foot space, expand into and expand to a 5,000 square foot, and they still think it's going to be, let's say their monthly utility is $1,500, and it's going to remain $1,500. It doesn't. Okay.
No. Yeah. All of a sudden, it becomes $2,000 to $3,000.
Yeah, you want more walls and you want more windows and all that stuff, those things come. Yes, the benefit is more light, more visibility, or more scenery, but it does come with a price.
Well, let's jump into own. So owning is obviously you can own something that is already existing that you're buying and renovating, or owning something that you're going to build brand new on a blank piece of property. But you own that piece of real estate. You own that facility. The biggest thing that is, and Han talked about that, is are you of the mindset that you want to be an owner versus a tenant? Do you want to have the ability to be basically in control of everything? And having, first item on the list is you have equity. You are building equity in something. So when you create that new facility that either comes out of the ground or is renovated, and you put money into that facility, that equity is yours. You pay for it on a monthly basis through your construction loans, but it is your equity. So if the value of properties in that region go up, your equity goes up. You have something of tangible value that is yours and only yours, and you can do a lot with that. So that's definitely one of the big pros when you look at a lease versus a own, is that you have the equity, you have control, you're pretty much in control of all aspects of it. But like Han said, a lot of people don't like to be in control of all aspects of things because they don't want to deal with all that stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're leasing a space and your air conditioning unit goes out, okay, it's the landlord. If the roof leaks, it's called the landlord. Okay, but when you own the building, you're the landlord. You're leasing it to yourself, basically. So you'll be responsible for fishing out that, floater in the toilet. You're the guy that, that towed the car that been parking there illegally in your lot. No, you deal with everything, so it's yours. But You know, so not everybody have the appetite for that. They rather just pay the rent and don't have to worry about owning the building and all the issue that may associate with it. So if they want decide to, you know, pick up the rug and move to someplace else, they can do that without having to worry about selling their, you know, their property. So
that's correct. Right. And but there's a real big advantage, as we see it, is that if you build, if you own, you have the ability, if you plan for it right, you could either, one, have the ability to expand on your existing property when you're ready, and you don't have to worry about that adjacent tenant being kicked out, or you build bigger and let and basically become a landlord of your own to others. And then when, you know, obviously they're going to give you rent on a monthly basis, which helps your overall nut that you have to crack every month. But at the same time, it gives you the built-in ability that you decide after 5 or 10 years that we're outgrowing this space and I can make more money by adding more operatories than I can by leasing it to the florist next door. So you kick the florist out after they're done with their lease term, and then you expand into your new facility, and on the weekend you open the door between the two, and boom, you go from, you know, 7 ops to 14, whatever. You really have that capability and availability of that kind of expansion, which is pretty attractive when it comes to the business model. Dr. Hunsinger, our co-founder of HJT Design, is actually in that particular situation right now. We're adding 2 more operatories onto his already existing facility, and he basically just ran out of chairs. And
he have 12.
And he needs more. And so we have the ability on that property, which he owns, and it's positioned in such a way that we can put those 2 operatories right over there and basically on a weekend open the door between the two, and boom, he's up and running. So Friday he has, would you say, 12 operatories, right, Hon?
Yep.
And then on Monday he has 14.
Yeah, and his particular facility, there is only enough land to expand 2 more. But, you know, the main thing in owning your own building, owning your own land, besides, you know, equity and control, you have security. It's building security, the security that nobody's going to put a undesirable tenant next to you. Nobody's going to park, the tenant next door is not going to park all their car in front of your door and take up all your space. It's a peace of mind that you can't have or don't have when you lease.
You set the standards.
Yeah.
You can set the standards of whomever you want to have. If you build bigger and you have a tenant, you can set the standards on who that tenant is going to be and what they're going to be. You know, you can say, you know, I'm not really comfortable with leasing it to a particular type of business, but you basically can be in charge of who's going to be your next door neighbor.
Yep.
And what that neighbor can do or can't do on your particular facility. So it is a matter of that you have the ability to grow, you have the ability to set your standards, but the big thing is you have the ability to pick your location. More so than a lease. Now, like Han and I first originally said, we don't favor one over the other. We're just trying to give you the facts. But it's a lot easier to pick your location on a own, where you maybe will be owning an existing facility or building on a vacant piece of land, as opposed to, okay, I'm only restricted to, there are only so many retail centers that are around, and whichever ones are available is the one I have to go to. But in reality, maybe I need to, I would like to be maybe another mile down the road, but there isn't a retail center there, or there's nothing there that's for lease. So with the ability for owning, you can then potentially have a much bigger variety of possible locations that you can either buy something existing or build something new and be in that specific targeted location that you want to be, and set yourself up to be there for as long as you want to be.
You know, think about visibility too. That's something that we have talked about, that you can be in a huge shopping center or just a simple shopping center where there may be a dozen tenants and you're one of them. And, you know, and so when passerby going 40, 50 miles an hour, they can see your little sign on the, you know, on the pedestal signage out at the front, underneath the big anchor store, or they look at the ocean of signage across the front of the facade and try to figure out which one's the dentist. Well, if you have your own building, the sign is yours, only yours.
And the building is your sign. We as designers and architects, you basically get two signs. You know, you've got obviously your actual signage, but the other most important part is you have the ability to create a brand, an identity with your building. That becomes as much as, if not more, of a signage than anything else. We see that quite a lot.
Yeah, I'm looking for a dentist that wants to build a building look like a tooth.
Keep looking, hon. Yeah. Oh, my. Oh, boy. Okay, let's go into the next part of this. And it basically is that you own everything, and it is your investment. You know, this is an investment that you're putting into when you own, that it's yours. You can basically, you can deal with the appreciation on a totally different basis, but you know, you're building equity. And think about long term. Let's say that you're at a stage in your practice that you want to start thinking about, well, do I need to bring associates in and set those associates up so that they eventually buy me out when I decide that I don't want to do this anymore and I want to retire? You have something of equity. You have something that is of value other than just a list of patients. You have a building. You have property. You have all of that available to them. So effectively, you set yourself up to become much more attractive to the potential pool of associates than, for example, if you were just leasing a facility, then the associate is going to look at that as, well, okay, it's just a lease, so I'm going to be coming in an associate of a lease practice. I either am going to take over that lease and stay where I'm at, or I'm just going to take the book of practice and move into another facility if I decide to buy that particular practice out. So one is much more attractive and obviously has a lot more value to it than the other does.
Well, naturally, if you own your own building and you decide to retire, you can sell the practice and retain the real estate itself and be the landlord. That's also an option.
Basically, rent. Yes.
Yes.
You could have the new practice owner give you that rent check every month and factor that into your retirement. Then obviously there is the tax benefits. Talk to your accountant. Let them give you the particulars on the tax benefits of leasing versus owning. But under owning, it's my understanding that there are a lot more tax benefits currently available that you can take advantage of and be able to integrate that into the practice on a monthly and yearly basis.
So, hey Jim, in terms of facility. Now we're kind of done chatting about the taxes and all that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of leasing and building new, and looking at the designing of it, the building of it, and all that, what do you see as the huge benefit, one versus the other? Is there any huge difference in, in the design and construction process? What would typically be the pros, and what would typically be the cons?
Well, there are some very attractive benefits to the owning side, and that is that you get to place the building, your practice, on the property if you're building brand new, in such a way that you take advantage of all of the wonderful things that property might have to bring to the table, whether it be an exposure, whether it be proximity to particular amenities, whether it be proximity to traffic patterns, intersections, those kind of things, where you can set this up in such a way, and that's what we do when we look and investigate on a particular piece of property or on a site. We're going to look at all those factors and integrate that into the design so that you can purposely create something that's going to take advantage to all those amenities, and you get to sit there and set yourself up to succeed a whole lot much more than you would, for example, under a lease. Under a lease, a lot of those options are not available to you. You're there. You're within that lease space somewhere. Pick a slot on the end, on the middle, on the left side, on the right side. That's it. You don't have any real control over what happens after that point other than what's within your four walls that form your lease space. When you're owning something, you have total control over every aspect of that building. If it's an owned existing building that you're renovating, or it's a brand new build, you want to say, I want windows to go this direction, or I want windows to go that direction, you can do that. You can design it in such a way that you have windows that go there or windows that go there. You can say, no, I want the entry to face the south, because in a northern climate, for example, that's the perfect location for the sun to melt all the snow, and it minimizes my issues with ice and snow at my front door. Well, you might not have that available to you if you're dealing with a tenant space. Or you may say, I want to put parking over here for my all my employees, and I want to have all my clients park out here. And so you have all of that available to you where you don't have those options. So you just have a much bigger list of possible options to amenities when you own a piece of property, or specifically build a new piece of property versus leasing it. That's probably the biggest thing that we see, and it allows for setting a practice up more and more and more to take advantages and actually have a better chance of succeeding even more than what you would in one over the other.
Yeah, Jim, in terms of like usage of land, okay, of course, when you lease, you really don't have a say in it. You just take whatever space that's available within that, that strip mall that may fit your particular spatial requirement. But in terms of exposure, a shopping center usually plays all of their parking in front of the building, typically. Okay. Because they want to let the passerby know that they're busy. That they look at all that oceans of cars, come on in. And then, so if you're in that type of lease space, you are a good distance from the main road. It's a little harder to pick you out from from your neighbors. When you build new, typically building owners, the building, they want the building to be seen. So often the Parkington is kind of hidden. It's in the back, and the building is close to the road, so that way you get the most exposure. That's you know, I've done plenty of shopping complex and layout, and that is the two physical feature that I see. They go through basically the same type of regulatory requirement. You, of course, when you lease, you still have to deal with the zoning a lot less. When you build new, then you go through a lot more. But in terms of construction and stuff like that, you deal in leasing, you deal usually strictly with just the inside. And, of course, you have a lot more fun when you deal with a from-the-ground-up structure. Much more fun. That's what we call it.
Yeah, well, definitely it's fun. But even a renovation of an existing building, you know, if it's the right building to renovate, we have had horror stories in regards to the renovation of existing buildings that should never, ever have been renovated. Those facilities should have actually been torn down and a new facility built. And Bill will tell you horror stories that he's personally been involved with that, in retrospect, should have tore it down. But you can and effectively do have a lot more available options to you when you build or renovate and own it versus whether you lease it. So, you know, there are a lot of advantages. Now, the last advantage that I have, or at least the last aspect that we want to talk about when it comes to owning, is there's the lending benefits. Specifically, dealing with SBA loans. SBA loans want to see a owned piece of property or real estate as well as owner-occupied. So you have the ability to tap into that kind of lending option. And that kind of segues into a commercial in the sense that Mike Montgomery from Live Oak Bank is going to be our guest on our episode number 11, which is scheduled for September 25th. Is that right? No, I'm sorry. He is scheduled
for October,
yeah, 25th is not too soon. He is scheduled for October 30th, yeah. So Mike Montgomery from Live Oak Bank, he's a senior loan officer there, is an expert when it comes to SBA loans and everything that comes with that and what the advantages and disadvantages are. So please tune in, call in, and pick his brain, because it's a perfect opportunity to really get an earful as to what's available out there. And there are a lot of exciting options. But with that, what other aspect, Han, would you like to talk about under the build or slash own category?
No, I think we cover most of it, Jim. Of course, it's lease, and lease or build new. It all depends on your particular circumstances. Some of the best people that can help you to make that decision should be your accountant. What is your financial health, and what would be the term that I want to use, Jim? Your ability to carry the note. Okay,
your financial health. What's the health of the practice like? So obviously your accountant, your lender, and of course you want to look at that in relationship with all the other aspects of your practice. You know, how's your patient load going? What's your business model been doing? Are you progressing in a positive fashion the way you should be? You got everything firing in all cylinders. You've got way too many patients and not enough operatories. The kind of person that really is, well, I need to do something and I need to do it now. So lease or own really has equal options available to them in a lot of areas, but in a lot of areas they are total opposite of each other. Han said before, and it's very true, not everybody is cut out to be an owner, and not everybody is cut out to be a landlord, and not everybody is cut out to be a tenant. So it also has to do with what you're most comfortable with. If you like to make a monthly check, rent check to somebody else and let them deal with all the issues that it comes with the building, then, yeah, you should lease. But if you like to have total control and all those options available to you so that you one day can have something that is of equity and has a value that someone can buy you out more than just a book of business, then you need to own, whether that's a new facility or a renovated facility. That's really the kind of the nutshell, the bottom line. And there's so many, but you have to know all these things on both sides of this before you sign on the bottom line. Please get out there and get those team members together and let them give you those thoughts and those that information before you make any decision on whether, say, I'm going to lease this or I'm going to own this.
Yeah, gather your information, get the facts. That way you're not making an emotional decision. Being informed is really would be ideal. So pick the expert brain. I mean, we can, your CPA say, hey, you got all the money that you need, everything looks great, and go buy the land and go, and you can go build the building and stuff like that. We certainly can help you with that 24/7. Okay. We, all those answers that deals with, design and facility and stuff like that, we can talk about it all day long, but there's other experts that are more well-versed in other area that could help you make these financial decisions or to tell you to wait. Okay. Management consultant, I would also advise you the same, whether to go to a split shift, and change your system and stuff like that. So that way you can, bring more patient into your office without physically expanding. So there, once you get all your answer, then if it's to go do new or to move into a different location or even to renovate and expand the existing lease space, if that option is available to you, we certainly can help you with that.
Definitely. Well, I've already given the commercial for the next episode with Mike Montgomery. Next week's episode is going to be, can an equipment supplier be my designer? So we're going to have fun with that one. But at this time, Han, what's been hot on the discussion board with Dentaltown?
An interesting topic, and it come on once in a while. And a lot of time I find that, having information is great. Having misinformation is horrible. It deals with prefabrication or prefab construction. It sounds sexy. It sounds fabulous because who doesn't love to have something just brought off the truck, set it down, lock it together, turn and open the door and see patient, right? The term prefab, I think a lot of time is it get misinterpreted what modular. I have not encountered a true prefabricated construction project yet. There's always a little hybrid. There's no company that I'm aware of that have total control where they, they have total control over the entire project. They are limited in their capabilities. And so when the term prefabricated construction or prefab construction brought up from time to time, I kind of cringe because it gives people, the reader, a false sense of that's the magic. That's the magic bullet. It's a one shot solution to everything. It was interesting for me.
Cheap and fast, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things that you can do, like, for instance, in your office, things that would be, that we would consider, some may call it prefab, but I would call it more modular. Modular things that you brought onto the site that come, that have multiple components that look the same, okay? And you put them together and you have, it's almost like a Lego system. Prefab is bringing it, it's already, it's built to the point where all you have to do is do a final touch-up, a paint. And you put it down and you put on a piece of trim and you turn on the light, okay? So prefab is a lot more, how should I say, a lot more finished than modular. Modular to me is more a component. So when the term prefab construction, there was a company called DIRTT, D-I-R-T-T, that was discussed in the last couple of days on Downtown, and it was presented as a prefab construction. But in when you involve in the design field, I relate that to very much to like your what we call it, movable walls or demountable walls. And I think that's like the movable or demountable wall was the grandfather of the system they use now. Of course, it's more sophisticated. It has more amenities, more utilities, but it's similar to your open floor, your open office floor concept, where you have those work cubicles. Those cubicles have grown up to become this type of wall system. So it's still a very limited capability because it only deals strictly with the interior of a space of a building that's already in place. Okay,
right.
So from
a dental standpoint, you're saying that prefabrication versus modular, prefabrication could be equated to panelization.
Kitmetry.
Yeah,
panelization is different.
You know, panelization has to do with the exterior walls potentially and interior walls. You can do both.
Yes.
But prefab means that it's built off the site, brought to the property, finished or as finished as possible, and physically placed into its location. So
no.
I equate that to a mobile home or a double wide. Where
the
whole thing, you build the whole thing off-site in a factory, bring it over, slap the two pieces together, and you've got yourself a finished facility.
Yes.
Kind of like we've all seen those modular buildings that they have in schools for classrooms. Yeah, where you have those modulars that are brought in, they're built in factories, they're brought into place, dropped on a foundation, and they can open the doors in that kind of quick fashion. But from a dental standpoint, we've not ever seen that happen. And I can't see.
Yeah, we have not.
Yeah, and I can't see the rationale. I can see the desire. The desire is, well, it's cheaper and faster because you don't have to deal with all the stuff on the outside, and you do it in a controlled environment within a factory. But to be able to create a dental facility like that, I don't see the practicality of that happening. I would see the practicality potentially of if you were doing a ton of operatories, that you could actually create those prefabbed modular and drop those into a facility. But then that would only make sense if you're going to, you know, be doing, you know, dozens of operatories. So for example, if we had a school or something like that, where you would have 25 or 30 operatories, then it makes sense to do that. as opposed to trying to do it out in the field. But from a building standpoint, you can't move buildings that size.
That's right.
Have to break them up into pieces.
Yeah, you know? I'm engaged in a conversation with the local rep, because I look at everything has a viability in application. Okay, so if you have modular wall or demountable wall, and that's what I think the industry is more familiar with the term. Modular wall would be walls that we can move, very much similar to what you have in convention center. It's on a track that you can move. Demountable means that you can take it down. Okay,
intact.
You have a full wall
that has all the particulars in it. You slap it down in the particular location. So let's say you're doing the head wall of an operatory. You theoretically could do that out of a demountable wall, prefabricate that off-site, but then I'd ask the question, why would you want to do that unless you had dozens of them?
You lose, actually, in this particular application for this particular company, and I think it's true to a lot of companies of such, is that you lose the flexibility of customization. You lose the ability to react if some mishap happened in the field. So the component is designed in the factory to spec, to size. So when you build the exterior of the building and it's a little off for any reason, the whole system has that domino effects. It's not a conventional wall assembly for you to have plumbing and other utilities. In fact, they rely on the ability to ship it. So things that are rigid, such as copper piping, cannot be put into the wall components. Based on their videos and stuff like that, it's not truly modular in terms that they bring out the panel, they put it up, and they attach. There's a lot of issues that associate with dental offices that are not typically found in commercial office, like a architect's office or a insurance company. You have a lot more plumbing, so it's not isolated to just the bathroom and the kitchen. You have medical gas. You have utilities. There's extensive amount of utilities and technology that need the flexibility. So a modular, to truly go with modular, it's a lot of coordination and a lot of maybe the vendor have to have special components that specifically cater to the dental industry. I've seen their video, but I have not seen a true application that we typically can compare with conventional plumbing. But it's a big topic to discuss in a few minutes.
Well, absolutely, and it actually leads into another potential topic, and that is the systems that are available for the exterior of the building. And I talked a little bit about panelization. Well, panelization is a scenario where you theoretically can build portions of your exterior wall in a factory, bring them to the job, and set them up. Now, not all of them have the ability to be completely finished, but it can be, and you can have, there's a lot of types. It could be done out of metal studs. It could be done out of wood studs. It could be done out of something called SIPS panels, which are structural insulated panel systems, all of which have advantages and disadvantages, and the ability to be able to increase the speed necessary to get a building up and under roof. It's all about how fast you can get it under roof, and as well how efficiently you can do that. Some of these panelized systems can be put up even in inclement weather. You don't have to worry about rain or snow or those kind of things. So that's just another whole interesting discussion. And we've actually got a project over in Chicago area right now that is a six panel system and a pretty large facility. And it's our understanding that they've scheduled 2 weeks to put up the whole envelope of the building. So
yes,
what is
I mean,
that?
That
about? That's about 8,000 feet.
In square feet?
Yeah, it's about 8,000 square feet, isn't it?
No, it's just a little more than 6,000 square feet, Jim.
Oh, okay.
But it, yeah. But they say that they should be able to erect it much faster than 2 weeks. But you know, sometimes you give you want a little slop time, so that way, just in case the weather, the Mother Nature decided to take 2 days and dump a couple million gallons of water on you and stuff like that. So, but it's. But those to take and look at those options and type of construction method, it require a different level of thinking, a level of involvement, coordination, and things like that. We can have an episode that we can talk about all that nuts and bolts.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well,
okay.
With that, I think we've definitely given everyone a lot of things to think about and a lot of questions. If there are any questions, feel free to get a hold of Han and myself at get us through our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Call us on our 800 number, which is 1-866-213-1268. You can email us. We're here available to ask any and all questions. And obviously, we've enjoyed this time together, and hopefully you've had a fun learning experience, and we're looking forward to next week's show. Han?
And thank you for tuning in and spending your time with us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. Contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.